Hey, it's Kenyas from G2 Esports.
Richard Chucks Papillon.
I'm Apex from G2 Esports.
This is Smith.
Hey, this is Buddy from G2.
I'm McKay, and you're here listening to the Central Ring.
Okay, so let's start.
Hello, hello and welcome to another edition of The Center Ring, aka TCR, aka your favorite esports podcast. I'll be one of your hosts for this evening. My name is Tim. The gentleman joining me tonight, you know him, it's Anuj. Anuj, how are you?
Hey, what's up, buddy?
We got a special episode for everyone today. If we sound different, it's because we are recording at my house and not at the professional broadcast studio that we normally do.
The undisclosed location.
The undisclosed location one. This is episode 63 of The Center Ring. And dare I say it, it might be the best episode we've ever did.
Best intro we've ever had.
Yeah, I slaved over that one today. We have the complete collection of the G2 CSGO team. So
that was good work, man. I like it.
I figured let's just push them together, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Awesome show, though. It's going to kind of be a grab bag episode, if you will. Nothing, no huge news happened throughout everything, but just enough happened in everything to where we can talk about it.
Enough big news.
Enough big news, yeah. But not like earth shattering. Yeah. Right. E3 happened, and that's like the cool thing to talk about. So we'll do our take on E3. We, esports was there, ESL was there this year. I think it's really the first time that esports was really in the spotlight at E3, so we'll talk about that.
We're giving you the E3 esports edition.
There you go. Lots of CS to get to. We'll talk some state of the CS, or state of CS, I guess, rather. And a lot of Overwatch news. To get to players getting banned, maybe you can go pro. I don't know. We'll get to that in a second. Oh, and then of course we'll end the show with E news, as always. But like I said, we are recording from my house. I know we've been saying now for probably since episode one that eventually we will be recording at my house, and it just so happened to be 63 episodes later. It's finally true. So if it sounds weird, if something sounds off. Let us know on Twitter at The Center Ring, so that way for the next recording at the house, we can get that fixed and everything there. Because to be honest, the beauty with recording is this could all sound awful and you just don't know until you listen to it again.
And I'm not going to go back and listen to this.
No, it's going to be me and I'm going to have to post it and everything there. Fun story though, before we get into esports. This is not the first attempt to record at my place of living. So the very, very first episode of The Center Ring was done at my apartment. Brandon and I were there sitting on the couch. I have the recording software and the equipment and everything just built up through the years working in radio. You come across a few microphones and headsets. We recorded. It was probably about 45 minutes. You know, that's kind of what we were aiming at throughout the whole time. And I started with this very... basically, if you listen to episode one now, that's kind of what it was. But we learned something. And that's if your laptop goes to sleep in the middle of recording.
It's not recording anymore?
It's not recording anymore.
Oh, jeez.
So we did about 45 minutes. I turn. I'm like, okay, well, my Mac, like the screen goes black, but it doesn't go like turn off. Well, apparently my other laptop, when it goes to sleep, it kills everything. So I realized that we only had like 10 minutes worth of audio from the first episode. I was like, nope, not doing that again. So that's why we recorded at the studio from here on out, and everything sounds better. I don't have to mess with anything. So we basically redid episode one of The Center Ring twice.
Do you feel like the non-recorded hidden episode would have been better?
Definitely. Definitely, because like I said, there were a few things being episode one. Like I had my intro, right? Knocked it out of the park. I was like... what I want this to be is for anybody, whether you're new into esports or you're a veteran in it, I want you to enjoy this. I want to take it serious. I don't want to be about gimmicks or anything like that. I had this huge speech for it, and then it wasn't like recorded at all. So I wanted to still get that point across, but I think if you go back and listen to it, you could definitely tell I was pulling from memory. I'm like, what did I say last time that sounded good? But so happens with technology. I mean, it's even happened at the studio where I forgot to hit record once or twice or, you know, whatever.
SD card goes full.
Yeah, SD. Well, things not happen. Even full. Yeah, it just breaks on you. It's technology and it's showbiz, man. That's what happens. And I'll tell you what else happens. In Overwatch, I know you're not too far into the Overwatch pro scene just yet.
I'm waiting, like everybody else is.
Right, we've discussed it on the show. Well, DeFran, he was a DPS for Selfless, okay? Blizzard has recently announced that they are bringing on the Banhammer for him. Temporary Banhammer, I should say. They don't go Valve's route where they completely kill you
done
off
for
forever and you're done.
The
get out of here. Right. They will just do the temporary season ban. Why, you ask? Basically because he's an ass. Like, the more and more I was researching on this, the more and more it made my blood boil.
He's that guy you hate in
any
game you play.
In all of them. Like, he is that guy.
Yep.
And I'm not going to lie, the more and more I watched of his Twitch videos, something might be a little off.
Well, something's off.
So, disclaimer, if there is, I take all this back.
There won't be an episode 63.
Well, there, you know, I won't apologize for it because you're still an ass, but I'll feel bad. No, that will be the difference.
You're an ass with an excuse.
Right, exactly. But basically, so DeFran was on Twitch for roughly 2 days from what I hear. I don't watch him on Twitch or anything like that. So this is all hearsay at this point. But about 5 or so days ago, he was banned from all of Season 5, for the rest of Season 5. He was banned from even logging on to his account for Overwatch for a week. Banned for the remainder of the season, and he is also disqualified from Overwatch Contender Season 0 and Season 1.
That's great. I mean,
completely. And the one thing that makes all this unique is this is all because for about 2 days straight on Twitch, he was playing competitive mode, not professional play.
Yeah, just what we play.
Just regular old pickup competitive mode.
Yep.
Anyone can play it. And he was being an ass. He was trolling. He was throwing matches, sitting in spawn while looking at what appeared to be hentai on YouTube, on Twitch. So that will get your Twitch account banned,
I'm sure.
Wasn't
he telling his followers to also throw games?
He was telling followers to throw games. I mean, he was that guy, right?
Like I said, the person you hate in every single game. We've all been in one of those matches, whether it's Counter-Strike, Overwatch, where the person just doesn't care to be there, and it's fun to him.
And you're like, dude, why are you here?
Yep.
Like, why are you playing competitive mode? And it's because he thinks it's hilarious that you're getting upset about it. Well, Blizzard didn't find it that funny, and this is the first time that I can really remember where, I'm going to say, off-the-field actions. I don't know what the proper way.
Like, in-game
the
still,
AFK actions.
Yeah.
The away-from-keyboard action affects your pro side. Right? It's disciplining now for something that has nothing to do with your pro play or what you did during a match or cheating or hacking.
Your casual
it's because
gaming
your attitude.
Life affecting your competitive gaming life.
Correct.
You haven't seen that before. You
right.
Know, most of the things that people get in trouble for is, you know, like we've seen the throwing a match, cheating in a game, you know, whatever it might be, not wearing your headphones properly, all those things. Like, you just don't see it from something, a personal gaming moment.
For an attitude issue. And especially one like this where You're a professional. You should want to promote your game.
Yep.
You should want to
build a positive community.
Yeah, build a positive community around it. Not when you have 2,000 viewers on Twitch. Do not go back and promote all of them to throw matches, sit in the spawn, or do whatever. How about don't call your viewership ISIS?
Yeah.
Overwatch ISIS is what their nicknames were.
Yep.
Like, what did you think was going to come from that? And so Blizzard was like, nope, we've had enough. Now, I know some people have been getting Blizzard crap for taking so long. Like I said, this was going on for 2 days, live on Twitch, very obvious who it is. Go ban them real quick.
There's probably no rules in place at the same time for something like that. So I could see it taking a moment to, like, You don't want to make the wrong decision.
Exactly.
You don't want to get the backlash that they got in CS for the IVP ban. Like, you want to take it far enough to where it affects the athlete, but you don't need to totally ruin the guy for it either.
Well, and I think there's also a line of, you know, the punishment has to fit the crime.
Yep.
If they banned him after throwing two matches, right? Being an ass throughout two matches, this punishment would be a bit excessive. Because it's kind of like, whatever, don't do it again.
Yeah.
Right? But for the fact that it went on for 2 days, that kind of gives a little bit more room for Blizzard to be like, you're done.
And like you said, also with naming his group or followers, what he was naming them or calling them in that case, which was Overwatch ISIS, whatever, showing what he was showing on video, like you're saying. I mean, all those things are what factor into this kind of discipline, right? It's not just the throwing.
No.
But it's how you're acting, well, and how you're representing your sport.
And Selfless came out, their owner, Brad, he came out and said, we fully support it. They he mentioned in their statement online, on their website, that they're hiring help for him so he can get some therapy, which, again, after watching the videos on Twitch and on YouTube,
might need something.
Like, you really do feel like he needs therapy. Like, this did not sound like he was either on something or dude's got some screws loose.
Yeah.
Because it was not normal sounding. Now, this is all that, right? All that being said, okay, you're a jerk. It's fine. It's really, after the match is over, I'm over it, right? This is what irks me, though, this is him being a professional gamer, right? Living everyone's dreams. This is what irks me. This was his tweet with his response on it. And then I'm going to censor this because this is a family show. I honestly don't give an S what happens to me and my effing career. You can all go F yourselves. But I am starting to realize my actions may be affecting my org, teammates, and their careers. ... Time to reform into Seagull version 2 and be a cute little nice guy. Feels bad, man. Troll community disband. He ended up deleting that tweet. Wonder why. But it wasn't any better, because then he followed up with, I reap what I sow and I deserve this. So you're like, okay, that's the politically correct answer. I'm going to own up to it. I deserve it.
Sounds like somebody who just doesn't give a rat's ass.
And then he follows it up there 2 days later. As I said down below, I honestly don't give an F. Don't worry about me, boys. Freedom and peace at last. See you in 3 months, meaning when the season's done. He's going to jump back on and just do it again.
Is Selfless keeping him on the team during this time?
Their statement was that he is going to remain on the roster. They do have a replacement and everything to do the Contender League and everything there. I think the only reason they're keeping him on here is to save face. I don't think, because if they legit think something's wrong with them,
they should get him help like they're doing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was some relationship built up between him and the organization. I think that's something that they might want to look into.
I mean, for somebody to be willing to give all of that up for such a stupid action and then not even to even pretend to be apologetic. No. Yeah. Well, you feel like something's got to be wrong there.
And here's this too. When was this? This was in April 16th of this year. Crosby, the team manager for Overwatch on Selfless, he put this on Reddit. Okay, Crosby even went up to him almost 2 months ago to the day. What are you doing? This is him talking to DeFrant. What are you doing in ranked that got you banned? Like asking, like, hey, you're banned in ranked. What happened? DeFrant, having fun. Smiley emoji. Crosby, nah, don't do that anymore. Like, still not really knowing what he was doing, but just saying, whatever you were doing, stop it.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably not good that you're getting banned from the game.
It's a bad look in general.
And then in April, that same conversation, DeFran goes, LOL, I'll keep having fun. Sorry.
So something's been building up, right?
This has been months. And even Crosby was like, I've even had private conversations with the kid. And I say, kid, he's 23 years old. I'm only 26. Like, I'm not that far removed.
Even if he was 19... Like, you know wrong and right at that point, right? It's not like he has no clue what he's doing.
You should also know by 23 what is a good career move. And this is not a good career move.
Like, you're talk about not taking advantage of an opportunity. You're one of the best players in a growing esport that's only going to get bigger. You see the salaries coming into other sports right around you, happening right in front of you. You're a Twitch streamer. Obviously, you know what's appropriate. You have 2,000 followers, like you said, watching you, so you already have a fan base. And you're willing to throw it all away for what? Like, what did you just throw your career away for?
For the lulz?
Like, basically?
Just to laugh. Just to say you're mad.
Even if something's, you know, mentally not right or is, you know, that's not the issue, there's some internal issue going on with the team, or the team has at least known, you know, they had to have had some warning signs that this guy could blow up any second now. The tweets show that. This conversation shows that, you know? I mean, it just shows that there was something there. Mm-hmm. Kind of leading up to this, and well,
I want to take the high road and say I wish him the best, right? Like, I hope he gets the help and I hope it helps him and he changes his ways.
Yeah,
but like we said at the start, he's just that guy.
Well, now you're banned for 2 seasons, right? Season 0, season 1,
as far as his professional season goes. Yeah.
So yeah, now you're missing out on the comp scene. You're going to be benched. You're not going to be practicing with your pro team because they'll have another person in place. People will only get better.
What other team is going to pick you up?
No. I mean, who's going to pick you up when you're banned temporarily?
Because he wasn't like, I mean, he wasn't Siegel. That's what, you know, like he's not.
You're not a superstar in your sport.
You're replaceable.
Yeah.
He is replaceable as a teammate, as a DPS and everything. It's not that, I don't know, it was a dumb career.
Without an established league, nobody has really built up the reputation to be bigger than the sport at this point, right? Without them having a league in place to have stats, and you see matches happening all the time, you see major tournaments taking place, nobody has the reputation to go out there and kind of say, I'm bigger than the sport. You know, no one's in that position yet.
And to say you don't care, well, then what other team is going to...
If you don't care, they should ban him even longer.
Right.
Or just kick him off the team.
So I don't see DeFran...
No, it's probably the last you'll be hearing us talk about him for some time.
This is true.
Probably update you in about 6 months once he's back.
Blizzard also announced, though, man, I think it was like yesterday or something here, that they're going to have an open division.
Very cool.
Basically, this is almost like your Premier League, where you and a group of guys, or you can even go in as a free agent and they'll find you a team. They're teaming up with ESL for this. As long as your master, which is 3,500 SR or higher... Which, if you're playing with a team, you're probably already that high just because...
Yeah. Kind of like an open division. You just have to be good enough to qualify.
As long as you're playing as a team, you're probably already better than half the other people random queuing. So I think that will open up... Here's the thing. It might be taking Blizzard a long time to set up their Overwatch League, but they're definitely setting up the groundworks.
Yeah, the stage is being set up right now to create the league, find the talent. There's no way the talent's been discovered within this sport yet.
Right.
You know, the game was released early to, you know, some of these streamers and competitive players or, you know, thought to be competitive players who have the advantage. Their names are now out there. But there's no way the talent within the sport has been found yet. I'm sure there's a lot of hidden gems out there that can take advantage of this opportunity and hopefully, you know, blossom into another superstar within their sport.
And I know we were even kind of looking down on Blizzard originally when we were discussing, saying how all these organizations are leaving, your pillars are crumbling. I almost feel like maybe Blizzard probably has it in their heads that we need the talent and we need the fan base. The organizations will come when they see the money's there.
I'm with you, but not at the same time.
No,
like,
I
feel like
don't
this
think
stuff
they're handling it
should
as
have
good.
Happened much earlier.
Right.
And now you could be getting to the point where you've found the talent, you've had a season or two of an open division, you've had a season or two of contender under your belt, even if it's just one season at this point.
And it's the communication.
Yeah.
If we all knew this was in the works, the fact that you have two minor league leagues for people
would get more excited.
You probably could have saved face by telling us that.
You know, one thing that's kind of standing out to me here is noticing ESL, because we'll refer to them a couple other times here today also, but, you know, their partnerships that they're building right now, they're building up quite the portfolio there of you know, groups that are working with different esports games that they are helping build and grow. And so they're like, you know, really leading the pack here as far as at least deserving another major and getting themselves set up to open up some of these majors here with groups like Blizzard. And, you know, we'll talk about, obviously, BlizzCon and all this stuff coming up. But they're setting themselves up to be in a good spot here.
It helps when you have friends in high places.
Yeah.
So moving on to CSGO news, state of CSGO, if you will. This Friday, June 16th, it kind of snuck up on me, to be honest with you. You have a rematch of the E-League Major. They're calling it the Clash for Cash.
On TV.
On TV, yep.
TBS.
Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern on TBS. You will have a rematch of Virtus Pro and Astralis. Winner takes all of $250,000.
How much?
We haven't talked about this on the show yet.
No, we haven't. And like you said, it really did kind of sneak up on us. You forgot it was right around the corner with ESL taking place. You had the Pro League finals, you know, just happening here. You kind of got that lull now in CS for the next couple of months. And this just, I completely forgot about it. $250,000
for the
to
winner.
The winner of this event.
Now keep in mind, the winner of the major got $500,000. So this is half of what that is.
It really brings, if VP were to win this, it puts them on the same financial standing ground as almost Astralis coming in second place at the event, just to, you know, make up the difference
here. I think it's, so we didn't talk about this when they originally announced this. And, you know, to be honest, I'm excited because it's VP versus Astralis. You have some big names in there. It's on TV. Always support esports on TV. But I also don't like the fact that the main focus on this is the money. I've always stated on the show, the money shouldn't dictate the importance of the tournament.
And that's all it does in this case.
And that's all this is talking about the money.
Yeah.
It's not showing off the talent. It's not, maybe good intentions were arrived at the start. But let's face it, VP hasn't been VP for a while.
Seems like a freebie is getting handed to him right here for an opportunity.
I'm interested to watch to see how Virtus Pro does, because our last impression was the Pro League, which is not a good impression because everyone knows they hate online play. Or maybe they don't hate it, but they suck at it.
They don't perform well in online play.
They are not good
on
online.
They're no longer in Pro League going forward. Yeah. What I would have preferred in this case, honestly, is if they had done a four-team tournament, brought back the two semifinalists in this case, and made it a little bit of a tournament in this case, because VP, like you said, has been performing so poorly. And if they come out and they throw up a stinker, which I think a lot of people are expecting them to do, at least I'm expecting them to do so. Astralis seems to be in form still. VP has just really been on the bad end for quite some time.
Obviously, I don't know what goes on behind closed doors with VP, but what have they been doing between the Pro League and now to change the rut that they were in?
I mean,
I know that's kind of their MO they're an up and down team, and when they're up, they're best in the world, and that's typically at majors.
They need all their players performing at a peak level. You don't even have two out of the five performing at a peak level right now. You have everybody kind of slumping at the same time, especially Snax. So, I mean, unless they pull it together, this is going
to
be...
Are we to the point now in esports as well where maybe $250,000 doesn't excite them as much as
this does?
Like for
it's
Virtus
a one
Pro,
game.
Though, for Virtus Pro, I mean, they make some pretty good money outside of just their salary.
Yeah, $250,000 is
$250,000. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not blowing that away. I'm just
saying. What is it, a best of three, or do you know how that works?
I think it's got to be a best of something, right?
Yeah, I would assume best of three.
We'll look it up here.
Five,
but my point is that Virtus Pro has been around the block a few times. If they don't have the stake of calling themselves the best team in the world, for them, is it that exciting?
Yeah, I think for this tournament in particular, it becomes difficult because they do perform better on LAN, but they have a lead up before these big games take place. You have group stage that takes place. You maybe have some qualifiers that take place. So you have that adjustment to get that mentality in place. Like, we're here for this LAN. We're here for this big event. This is jumping straight in.
Yeah, I mean, you're skipping everything, you're in the grand finals.
And you're in the finals. And here you go, $250,000 on the line. I think they'll be worked up. I mean, I think they'll be like, you know, they'll feel good going in. But when you're performing so poorly, I think it's hard to just all of a sudden go up and play number one in the world.
It is the best of three.
by the way.
Yeah. I mean, so now you're dealing with the map pool. You have to be more consistent in a best of three. You can't just have that one really good match. They have to play well twice against them. So I think it's a really tough spot to be in. I would have preferred a four-team format, but hey, still fun.
I'll watch it, a lot of money.
But... it's on TV, so I'll check it out. I think it's something to keep people engaged. I think
it's
just old.
It's me complaining about nothing when I say that I don't like the fact that the money is the focal point.
Yeah.
Right? It's really not that big a deal.
They're kind of ramping up for E-League starting up again. It's just a way to get their name.
They're staying relevant, which is what you need to do in this business as fast as it's growing. Another thing, though, again, about the money, the Intel Grand Slam was announced, which basically puts out a bounty for $1 million for the first team moving from the announcement on to win four of the next...
No, not from the announcement on. They grandfathered some of those wins in, right?
No, they didn't.
G2 doesn't have one?
It was a mistake, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they came out and said, oops, our bad. Yep. That's not right. So now it's moving from the announcement forward. Basically, out of all the $200,000 events remaining in the year, and I think there's 10 of them, the first team that wins four of them is going to get $1 million.
What if nobody wins four in the season?
It just keeps going until next, you know.
So it doesn't reset your points. Like, it's just first to get four throughout whoever. Whenever you get four, you get four.
Let's see here.
Is that too? That maybe too much information.
Verge winning with three. I know when someone wins, it resets it. I don't know if no one wins.
It just keeps reset. Yeah. Oh, let's just assume it's the next four events that you win. You get $1 million, man.
That's a lot. Yeah,
that's a lot.
Again, as a fan, I don't really care. You know,
no, this is for the players.
Cloud9 winning an extra $1 million bonus does absolutely nothing for me.
No, I think it'll
become...
Does
it excite you? Like, if you know a team is on the verge of winning their fourth, I mean, realistically, you're
going to
win
four
tournaments out of the 10. You're probably going to be excited about that if it's your team.
Yeah.
But as a spectator, do you care anymore if a team is about to win their fourth?
If they're on their fourth, yeah, I'm more interested. I'll be a little bit more engaged just because now they have the minimum of a $200,000 tournament on the line. It could potentially happen at a major where you have $1 million on the line at a major, $1 million on the line for the bounty. Now you're talking a $2 million pool.
If it does work that way, I will say that would be exciting.
At the minimum, it's at a $200,000 event or higher, right?
Right.
So you're going to see events next year scale up a little bit. Some of these $250,000 events might become 300s, 350s, 400s. So whenever that team gets to that point, we're still talking a lot of money on the line. I know you hate to say that, you want to focus on the money, but...
I am more of a... traditionalist, where I want to focus more on the games, I want to focus more on the teams, the history, the storyline behind it. Putting a high prize pool or a price tag on something does not make it a good storyline.
No, but like, if it's 1.5 mil on the line, that's like a... that is so big for them, it almost makes you nervous as a fan of that team. Like, if you're really rooting for that team, for you, if it's your team,
I could see where this makes it more exciting. Like, but if it's G2 or North... probably I'll be like, that's neat. You just got an extra
I hope
million.
It works out the way where it's at a major and the bounty tie up at the same time.
Yeah, that would be
something else.
That would make the hype level
I'm
insane.
Not going to be intrigued throughout. Like, it's not like I'm going to keep track of which team has 1 point, 2 points. Like I said, when they get to three, we'll probably all know anyway because that team is performing at a high level consistently. But when they get to three... you know, I'll be a little bit more intrigued, not throughout the process, right. though.
Well, and also, so here's another thing. If you just want to look at the negative side of it, because the likelihood of a team winning four out of the next 10, with the way CS has been, it's
unlikely.
It might not happen, right? Yeah. So all this could be for none. But one of the things is think like, for example, like this last ESL Pro League, okay? A lot of people complain that the best teams weren't even there. So if that happened to be like G2's fourth victory, are people just going to be upset because they basically got their fourth win?
No,
because... It automatically turns that tournament for that team into something that's more important than the major.
I don't think it's like unfair. Like, I mean, I get it. Hey, I was the most upset when it came to FaZe and... Astralis not being there, you know, I mean, I was super disappointed not to see them in Pro League, but at the end of the day, that's their fault. So if they're not in the event because they didn't perform well throughout the season to get to that point, and it's not going to, I don't think it'll take anything away from the viewer side. Hell, we still enjoyed Pro League as much as the next fan did. I thought it was a fantastic event, and
yeah,
we were missing number one and number two, you know, and it was still a great event. So the quality of the games nowadays within the top 10 is at such a high level that there's really small differences really between one, two, three, four. I mean, SK could be the best team at any point in time if they're on. Astralis, FaZe, we've seen what they can do. Now, can they find consistency and do this long-term? We'll see, but it looks like they will.
G2 now.
G2.
They've been in the discussion now for a while of possibly being the best team. You have Fnatic, who is still kind of that sleeping beast.
Yeah, the lurker that could do it. You know, let's see what happens with NiP, with their roster move. The quality of play is so high right now in CS that even if there is a team or two missing from one of these tournaments, it's not going to affect the level of competition you see in those tournaments.
I agree. Like I said, the dollar thing, it bothers me that that's the main headline, but I think it would be cool to see when a team does have that third win and going on their fourth.
Yeah.
To see how that affects them, that tournament.
Yeah.
Because that tournament just instantly became a lot more...
It became a major for them.
Yeah.
It's ultimately a major.
A lot more popular for them, a lot more important.
Especially if there's another team already at three and they're not in the tournament, I think that's where it would suck. So if there's two teams at like 3 points and only one of those teams is playing in the next big event, yeah, then it's kind of a bummer because you want to have both teams to have those same kinds of opportunities.
Right,
but
right.
We'll just see what happens. I think it's still interesting. It's cool. I like that Intel's getting more involved. You're just seeing a lot of these companies become more invested. If that's financially, if that's by putting out better products, we're now starting to see these race wars with the CPUs. Everybody's trying to do a little bit more, and I think that's just good for the sport all the way around.
And speaking of people trying to do more, one company that we've always said doesn't do anything for their scene is Nintendo. So I want to jump into the E3 part of the show. Because E3 happened, right? Obviously, big thing for anyone who's into games, whether it's esports or not, you probably paid a little bit more attention.
Any gamer should pay some attention to E3.
Well, so let's take a look at possible games that were looked at, maybe displayed a little bit at E3 for this year, and kind of discuss the generic esports potential, right?
Yep.
I want to start with Nintendo, because for the longest time, they've never really took the competitive side of their game serious. And to this point, even here, like they're really pimping out. They have an esports Twitter now for Nintendo. They're really trying to advertise for Splatoon 2, ARMS, and Pokken. That's their big three. This is what's going to be our competition.
Yep.
Still completely ignoring the Smash community, whether that's Smash U or Melee.
Yeah.
They do not appreciate those communities for what they are. I think
they feel they're so established they don't almost have to worry about it, but at some point you will.
And I know they've even came out and said before it's because they play the game so differently than the way the Nintendo wants you to play those games. Like for Smash, the competition's very hyped and it's not really kid friendly if you're listening to what goes, you know, the words being spoken.
It's super competitive. That's how it is.
It's super competitive and even Splatoon 2, if it gets to that point, what do you think those people are just going to go on their merry way?
Like, I did see the teams, maybe.
Well, you know. But and even then, though, like Smash, they changed the settings up. There's no items. It's not what Nintendo made the game for. So with that being said, though, I did watch some Splatoon 2.
What do you think? I watched minutes of it because I was literally leaving work and caught a few minutes. What are your thoughts?
Not that bad. There definitely was an entertainment value for they called it the Invitational. Definitely had some entertainment values to it. You don't have the best skill competitions there or anything like that, but it was still, I don't even know like how to put it. Maybe it was good because it was fresh, right? It was something new. It was stress-free to watch, but you never had like clutch moments or anything. Will I flip it on if it's on Twitch and it's like some whatever? Sure, maybe, whatever. It will not like sell out
stadiums or anything. If someone hears the next, is this the next big esports? I'll drive into oncoming traffic.
Like, so yeah, I'll just be honest with how I feel about Nintendo and the esports scene. They're nowhere close. Like, they're not, their games are just not built for it, and that's okay. Like, not everybody has to be into the esports scene. Splatoon is competitive, it's cool, but it's fun with my friends. You know, like, it's not much more than that. I'm not going to rage playing Splatoon.
USA did win.
USA did. They beat Japan.
Deadbeat, I think it was Daimu, is how you said Daimu. Their team.
Yeah,
for Japan, they did win, so.
Like, I mean, again, cool. It'll be fun for their community. Splatoon has a great community, a passionate community. I think they'll really enjoy it, but it's nothing more than like a casual
game. I did laugh. So the production for all of it was on point, but I did laugh because like they were doing like their little player profiles before the match, and someone on Deadbeat, which was the American team, it was pretty funny because they were asking him like, "Hey, why all do you play Splatoon?" That was the question, and some guy was like, "I mean, to be honest, I play it in my free time." I just laughed because it was like supposed to. They wanted it to be very dramatic, and he was just like,
"I play when I can.
Look, man,
I play in between class occasionally.
I play when I get home from school. What do you want from me?
30 pros. I can be one of them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I mean, it's fun. Like I said, it's great for what it is. Nintendo is amazing to their audience, but Nintendo's audience is looking for Zelda. Nintendo's audience is looking for Metroid. They're looking for.
Different types of games. I don't know anyone that was like, "Man, I can't wait for that Splatoon Pro League to start up."
No, like I said, you have it. It's cool. I'll come over and play it with you, you know, but I'm not going to pay too much attention to the pro scene.
There are other games. Pokken, that's been around. It's entertaining to watch. Again, it is whatever.
They all have their own community, which is great. Like, there is that hardcore.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the games.
That they have. Yeah.
I'm not saying the games are bad.
There's nothing wrong with the games. I don't want people to misinterpret this as Nintendo bashing. I just don't think they'll ever be on the big stage for esports. They have their own platform, they're massive in areas, but this is not going to be one of them. No.
And with all that being said, though, I am going to bash ARMS. I did watch the tournament today for ARMS. That game was boring. Like, when they first announced it last year, it looked like a tech demo. And watching the tournament, it looked like a tech demo.
Yeah.
It was boring. But moving on to kind of the more potential, the real potential.
Now, here's where the big boys come into play.
Nintendo, you tried. I appreciate it. Head up. Maybe you'll get it one day. But moving on to the big boys, Call of Duty World at War, Call of Duty World War II. Just getting my genres mixed up or whatever.
It's close enough.
Yeah, same thing. Call of Duty World War II was announced. I saw the multiplayer trailer. Wasn't really much of a multiplayer trailer, just as more of a... It didn't show too much, but you were telling me the guy that they showed
was horrendous. Okay, he was so bad.
One thing, I don't want to get into E3 discussion, but take everything with E3 with a grain of salt.
Because
people they have playing them...
Look.
It looks like they never even held a controller or a PC or anything.
Bring in a pro to have fun with this for a few minutes.
Not even a pro. Like, just bring in somebody who's playing the game.
Yeah, I mean, that part was a little annoying because it's hard to see the tactical aspect when the individual who's playing is obviously a very casual gamer in this case. The game looks like it has potential. What were you going to say? You were saying I was...
You're telling me, I think it was yesterday, that they are kind of changing the main thing of the game, though. There's no more kill perks.
Yeah, like they said, kill perks have changed, where they're trying to make it more focused on each individual player having an actual role within the game, rather than like just shooting for, you know, your kill streak bonuses that you get within the game. I'm not sure how much of that they've dived into or what. I'm sure people know a lot more about this than
I think the game's coming out in the fall, right?
Yeah,
so, I mean,
it is.
Things are going to be rapid.
You'll get a rapid release section going on here pretty soon and get a lot more info. But they have a mode now where there are vehicles in play, which is totally different.
Which I know
them.
Nate Shot was, you know, from Optic Gaming. Nate Shot was saying that there's no place in vehicles in Call of Duty. Look, there's no way it's going to make it to the esports scene that will be turned off or whatever game mode uses it.
It'll just be a traditional game.
That's
mode
a mute argument.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's just fun. Hey, you throw it in there. Why not?
Like, not everything in. So this is one thing. Okay, my friend Trey, he does his own video game podcast, not esports related, but actual just video games related. And he was asking me the other day at work. He was like, you know, watching all this stuff and like with Nintendo and everything's always marketed as the next esport, right?
Yeah.
The next big esports, the competitive gaming scene, take it by storm, get on it now type of deal. And he was like, is that really like a thing in esports? Because he doesn't really follow the scene. And he was like, are there really that many games that people cling on to and everything? And I said, honestly, no. You maybe have five.
You have a handful at most. Most of them bomb out.
Right.
Pretty early on.
Pretty early on.
A lot of MOBAs have bombed out early on.
They'll keep their viewership maybe around 8,000 or so, but eventually the stronger ones will survive.
Well, it's important to remember that these developers are not making the game with only esports players in mind. These games have more casual gamers than they do competitive
gamers.
That
being said, though, some of them do strictly make it towards esports. Now, normally those are the ones that bomb out.
Well, so this new Battalion 1944 that's coming out, I think that in 1942, 1944, whatever it is, World War II game also, they made the game strictly to be an esports game. It's an alpha right now. You can go check it out. I believe it's on Steam as well, so you can look at their Steam page. That's a game built for esports. That's all they marketed it for. Call of Duty has a ton of casual players, so they have to have other game modes.
Not everything in a game is going to be built for esports.
No, but there will be
and also
a section of it that is,
yes,
right? And
there
that's
will be.
What the community will latch on to.
Look at Halo.
Yeah.
Bungie did the same thing way back in Halo 2 where they added an MLG playlist, right? They kept all their normal casuals, but then they realized that there was a big community for this competitive style.
Yep.
Now, that being said, I also think companies in general loosely use the word esports now. They kind of just replaced
marketing tool.
It used to be called multiplayer.
Yeah.
Now we call it esports.
Yep.
Right? As far as the marketing goes, that's how it
you know, because if their game does blow up as an esport, they're all rich, right? So you might as well throw it out there and see where it goes. But with that title, how do you feel about Call of Duty going into World War II?
Me personally, I love World War II. I think partially growing up in the craze of World War II games like Wolfenstein and Call of Duty 1 and 2 and all of the earlier ones that were World War II centrated, Medal of Honor. All those games, you know, I grew up playing all throughout elementary school and everything there. So I was just naturally a big World War II kind of nerd to begin with. And I like that they're going back to it as far as a franchise. Admittingly, I like Call of Duty games. I think they do really well at stories and single players. They've gotten away from multiplayer, but that's not like a unpopular opinion. A lot of people think that. I am more so curious on how World War II will do competitively with esports.
For me, I was super excited when I heard the announcement that Call of Duty is going back to World War II. I thought that was an awesome move, especially to kind of compete with all the hype that was built around Battlefield 1. People were stoked about that, but Battlefield 1 is such a different game, right? Like, it's such a different game. It's built for those big war-style games. I mean, that's just what they sell you on, right? Watching the gameplay for Call of Duty, I really wasn't that impressed. Like, I feel like the game is built to be still more of a Twitch shooter kind of game, and Twitch shooter doesn't really match with my thoughts of World War II.
No.
So the game style and the feel and effects of the World War II didn't really mesh well with me. Just watching somebody do quick scopes and stuff.
Right.
Dude, who was doing that in World War II? Like, it's just not how the combat was in that time. So,
and that's why I'm curious to see how it translates to esports, considering the more twitchy type of games is what kind of becomes the more popular one. I mean, because think about it, even like with the latest Call of Duty and everything, a lot of the game types that were popular was the one where you throw the ball into the thing. Sure, we'll call it Call of Duty Basketball. That was like the one with jetpacks, and it adds that extra depth and skill to it. Like, it's going to be completely different.
People were complaining about getting rid of jetpacks. I wasn't expecting them to go back like 70 years old.
Activision was like,
you know, like,
fine,
we'll totally get rid of them. You have no chance of
them. I wouldn't be surprised that you see
more the modern warfare style game.
Right.
You know, where it's updated combat weapons. Like,
I wouldn't be surprised if you see both games still being here.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this game just didn't take off as an esports game, personally. There will be a community for it, obviously, because it's Call of Duty, so it will have its spot in esports, but
I think Infinity Warfare could still, that could still be, I mean, look at Smash.
Better visually.
You have two Smash games that are popular just as ever. There's nothing wrong with having that. Now, the also thing to consider is, I think coming up here shortly, Modern Warfare 2, whichever one is coming out for the standalone.
That's already out, right?
Well, but before you had to buy Infinite Warfare to get it.
Yeah.
Now they're releasing it as it's literally its own standalone for like $30, which for us, it's a little steep, but that had a huge following. I mean, that's what kicked.
I wouldn't be surprised if that took off more than
this. Now that that's becoming a standalone again.
Their issue now becomes you're splitting your community, right? So let's see. One will take over the other, but will prize pools remain as high?
You're talking about the Call of Duty community.
Yeah, but even that community, splintering a community is a big deal. If you have 20% following one game, now you have another 10%, let's say, following Modern Warfare 2, and you have...
My point is that you're already talking about a community that was okay with a completely new game every year. So true. For them just to
but
have...
they've never had three games to compete at the same time, right. Potentially, right? Right? So I wonder how it'll be for
but
tournament
even when,
organizers.
Previous games, like predecessors, were still considered the better game.
Yeah, like
they
Black
always
Ops and
moved to
the
new
next
year.
One. Yeah, like they have to come out with something new every year because that's just what they do at this point. But I'm more curious from the organizer standpoint. Which one do they latch on to?
That will be the more curious.
You know,
thing.
How much are these prize pools? Are you splitting up that
Activision
one prize pool for
Pro
three
League
tournaments?
That they do? Yeah. What game are they going to focus on? Yep. Are you going to focus on two different, three different Call of Duties if all of them weren't that type of popularity?
Are you splitting up that same prize pool amongst three tournaments, or are you now going to have that prize pool times three? You know, like, it'll just be interesting to see where Call of Duty heads with this new iteration.
Another one that I'm iffy on, but the fact that it's moving to PC gives me hope, and that's Destiny 2.
I'm
so
sold.
That is going to be a little unique in the sense of, what is it now? Because on PS4, it was 3v3.
No, so on PS4, they had game modes for 3v3, 4v, 2v2.
2v2.
3v3, 4v4, and I think 6v6 is how it was set up. So you could have four different game modes, all super casual kind of feeling game modes, but there was like a competitive scene. Just wasn't, if it's not on PC, it's not going to grow. This is going to be a standardized 4v4. It allows you to create a team, in my opinion. I think that's hard to do when you have five different game modes of a 2v2, a 3v3, a 6v6.
Well, it's like, what friends do you want to play with? And it's kind of
you start splitting
man.
It up. Then do they split up and play against each other? Do you have your org like go up 3v3 against one another? Like, how does that work? You know? I think standardizing it to a 4v4 for their true competitive, and I think they said they'll still have casual modes for like 2v2 and 6v6 and all that, but the competitive mode will be 4v4.
Will be 4v4.
That's awesome. I think that's great because it allows teams to build around that. You'll have your four normal players or three other players that you play with. It's going to be in four, you know, available in 4K. There's no FPS max on. There's no FPS limit on there. They're building this game to be an esports game. This game, you and I both played Destiny 1. We've both
loved
put
it.
In hundreds and hundreds of hours into Destiny at this point. Amazing game. Like, I loved it. There was parts that I didn't like. I think there was parts that everybody complained about. It wasn't open world enough. Traveling to orbit. Like, dear God, don't get me started on traveling
to orbit.
The
fact that you had to log in to a website to read the story mode.
Yeah, like, there were issues with the first game.
As an esport, you don't have to worry about it.
You don't have to care about any of that.
All that's irrelevant.
And the game itself. The game was like so much fun to play. Like,
yeah.
It was just a fun game to hop on with your friends. And
fast multiplayer.
The multiplayer for that was great. They're changing the way shotguns work in that to make it not so much if you haven't played the first one. In the first one, competitive mode is basically shotgun snipers. That's majority of the best players are going to be good with one or the other, and they're able to use both. They're changing that, where shotguns and snipers will fall into one category.
Like a heavy gun category.
And you can choose one or the other, and there will only be one ammo spawn for it. In Destiny 1, when the ammo dropped, your whole team could go grab that ammo for that particular gun. Now only one person will be able to grab it. So it makes it more defined to have roles once again. This guy will be a close-range guy. This guy will be our sniper. So they're really doing a good job setting it up. Super excited for the game, as you can tell. PC release date for that has been announced for October 24th and available for your other consoles, I think, September 4th. So that's coming up. I think it'll be one to follow. I'll definitely be following the scene on that just to see where it heads. And Tim and I are going to try and go pro ourselves.
Definitely.
100%.
Definitely. And we probably will go pro, to be honest with you.
We might even invite Brett on this ride.
Yeah. Well, maybe his coach. Be coach. Now, I do want to get into... Let's get into the one VR then that you had, because I do want to talk about Quake, but that will also go into e-news. So let's talk about this Echo Arena that you were telling me about.
Yeah, so I'll just kind of give you the quick briefing of this. So Lone Echo is the grandfather game here. Lone Echo is coming out as a single-player game. Same company designed what they're considering the first esports game for VR. Not really true. Unspoken is really the first VR esports game, which is taking tournaments going on right now. But Echo Arena... Echo Arena is going to be the first team-based esports game, which I think is important. So now involving multiple people in one setting where it's instead of one-on-one wizards shooting each other, this will be a 4v4 or 5v5 type format. If you have played, I gave Tim this example and he knew it, so I'm hoping you guys do too, but in Final Fantasy X, there was a game in there called Blitzball. Essentially, you were in this big watery
it's the
globe.
Most difficult thing you'll ever
most
do in a video game.
Infuriating part of that game. You're essentially sitting there with the ball. Picture water polo,
but underwater
versus overwater, right? So this has the same look and feel to that, in my opinion. I think it's something neat. It's not going to take off yet. VR is just, I think it's a little early for VR to be focusing on esports. VR needs to focus on making good VR content that's immersive, that's wire-free, like everything needs to go wireless for it to be an esport compatible game. You can't have 10 people running around on stage with wires connected
with
to you. Like, that is going to be the most biggest
laptops.
Show you've ever seen in your life. So, it's cool, it's groundbreaking, it's new. Fun. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll update you periodically on it, but it's not like we're going to be too involved in that scene. I'll try it. I'll call you over. You can play it. Tell me
I'll play on your
it
VR.
It is free for those who don't know. If it is free to everybody that has an Oculus Rift, I think it releases July 20th. Don't quote me on that, but it's right around there. Free to anybody with an Oculus Rift. And again, you can buy, if you like the game, support them, buy Lone Echo. That'll be around $30, I think, as well.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, let's get on to e-news then here real quick, and we can wrap up this show.
Yep.
Quake Champions, that was also kind of premiere. Well, not, you know, it's been around, but they had a tournament at E3 and everything there. Blue, actually, called it.
See the prize pool?
No, I don't know for E3. I know for the one coming up in QuakeCon, though.
QuakeCon, yep.
Yes, so QuakeCon is going to be in Grapevine, Texas, not Dallas, Texas. Don't let them tell you otherwise.
Close to Dallas, though, just so if you want to have
it's
in perspective,
like
20, 30
minutes away. I used to live in Grapevine, though, so, you know, I take it personal.
It's kind of a big deal.
But, no, so QuakeCon's going to be at the Gaylord this year, coming up in August. We will probably be there, but no, the prize pool is ridiculous. It's a $1 million prize pool for Quake Champions at QuakeCon. Now, I get it, because QuakeCon, Quake Champions, it's your new game. But
hey,
damn.
Sell it, man. Sell it. You have to, because we've all played the beta. The game is good.
It's good.
It's good. You know, if
like
you
it.
Are a Quake player, this has the Quake feel.
Yeah.
I think
I loved it.
Will be a cool community for this. It's going to be fun. I hope it's still going to be the 1v1 versus like the team-based game.
Well,
like,
I mean, I saw, I think at E3 they did have team.
Okay, they had team.
Mm-hmm.
I personally like that game for the 1v1. I think it's a super cool 1v1 game with team play. It's a little confusing to watch as a viewer. I mean, I feel like it's just stuff is happening so
I would want to see a pro team play it versus me and random
maybe how they
because I bet you they have
it,
a lot more organization
than you
than,
and me playing
right
in random,
because even when I'm playing the team mode in Quake Champions, I'm playing like alone.
Yeah.
Right, I'm playing solo.
I'm doing my own thing.
And
hey, half the time I'm figuring out what the hell I'm doing in that game,
so it's but that's I'm pretty stoked for that. I'm always a fan of
million
Quake.
Dollars dude,
we just need Unreal Tournament coming back now.
I wish
that would be my jam. Dota 2, speaking of a lot of money, Dota 2 became the first esport, according to esportsearnings.com, to be the first game to pay out $100 million in prize pool.
Cha-ching, dude. That's
crazy.
That
is ridiculous. It's not even close.
Who's second?
Second place is League of Legends.
50 million?
41 million. 41 God. And a half, just about, for League. So Dota 2 is over 100 million. Second place is League at 41. They've doubled theirs. Then you have Counter-Strike at 33 million, which is almost 34 million, we'll say. Not bad, considering League is...
Been around,
has a lot of backing to it. Then
it's all
StarCraft.
About the international, though. That boosts those numbers like 25 million per tournament.
You got to think, after every international, it's about been 15 to 19, 20 million dollars.
Two internationals by themselves make them number one in this category at 50 million.
Just about.
Yeah. So you said number two is 41. So just two international tournaments put them over.
And that's kind of sparked the argument of. Yeah. Why isn't everyone doing crowdsource, right? Like, if Valve would just do Counter-Strike, and I don't even think this Counter-Strike is including sticker money, because sticker money technically is not part of prize pool. That's just you getting the sticker money for your team's stickers. So if Valve opened up the...
Valve has so much they have to do. It's just frustrating to keep talking about, like, Valve should do this, Valve should do that, Valve should release this, update this. Like, damn, get on it, dude. Like, be a leader in this industry. Like, you have the ability to do it right now. You have the fan base to do it right now. Like, step up.
You have we can do it. We can do it. Let's save it for next week, though, because we're already running long here. I just want to look at some of these other ones. Heroes of the Storm, 8.7 million paid out. Overwatch, 2.8 million. I don't know where that came from. World of Warcraft, 3 million.
So it's like not even really close. I mean, these guys are way ahead.
I mean, you have, even here, in fifth, Counter-Strike. Not Global Offensive.
Yeah.
Counter-Strike at 10.7 million.
And they haven't had a tournament in 4 years, mind you.
Right. So it keeps it all in perspective of how the money is just now blowing up. And Dota is obviously leading the way with their international being crowdfunded and everything there. What else in here? New news. Oh, in sad E news, Yahoo Esports is no more. Starting in 2 days, actually, this Friday, Yahoo Esports is officially shutting down along with Yahoo. They were bought out by Verizon finally. They are moving now. So the official statement by Yahoo Esports is that they're moving. Yahoo Sports is moving to Oath, which is the new whatever Verizon is doing. Whatever.
I mean, sad. You know, people are losing their jobs and this and that. Like, it was unfortunate. We just got to spend time with Launders at ESL.
Yep, of Yahoo.
Wonderful
Esports.
Person. We got to meet, I believe his friend's name was Luke. That was his, like,
and it is a shame, too, because Yahoo Esports was one of the first big companies to kind of respect esports for what it was and take it serious. And
he had his own little studio that he could go into, he was mentioning. They seemed to really be enjoying it.
They did a lot for that. Now, there's no word or whether or not Oath will have its own esports category. I'd have to imagine if...
Probably not right away, because they said they're all free agents. So if they are, they're not retaining any of the talent. So that's disappointing.
I don't even know what Oath is. Yeah. I don't like the name, but whatever.
I don't even know how they release esports.
Now, moving on here in CSGO e-news, a little bit here. Misfits, we just mentioned last week that they ended up benching Shazam. Guess what? They ended up reactivating Shazam.
Yep.
Go figure. They ended up releasing Peacekeeper as a head coach, but they are keeping him on the team as their strategic coach and analyst.
Yeah, he's not going to have anything to do with the roster anymore, which he shouldn't. He just hasn't had success, you know, forming rosters, keeping rosters happy. Coach, man, do what you do best.
Jason R. stepped down from Optic Gaming's active roster so he could focus more on his streaming.
The inactivity, he said, was hurting his numbers. I don't blame him. A stream is much more long-term financially if you are not a top-level CS player. If you're a top-level CS player, 5 years in the sport, you could net a couple million dollars if you're good enough. At his level where he's at, his stream probably makes him more, and he can do that for the next 20 years if he chose to.
Outsider perspective, it's a dirty move because he was just put on the team, trying out a few guys, and basically wasted their time.
They said he was... like their fifth, but when they were asked about it today, I believe Hayes said like he wasn't officially the fifth.
And,
so
that's why I kind of respect his decision of, he even said, I just don't feel like I'm on permanent roster position here. If he doesn't feel comfortable with the situation, by all means, dude, go with what's going to get your money.
I don't have a problem doing what he wants to do. Commit You know, that's
and
what
it's
I say.
To
like,
do now.
Yep, do right? it now. Like, commit to streaming. Like, I don't want to see you bouncing back and forth
right.
and
it's better,
joining
it's
Mythic
better to
next
do this
week
than say you're going to be on the team and then try to balance them and it's just hurting both.
It's fine this time around. You just don't want to see it happen again, mm-hmm. right? So, like, be content with your decision. Community's fine. We'll move on. You know, we won't. We won't blink, really. It's just going to keep going.
Speaking of Optic, they ended up joining WESA along with FaZe rejoining the organization?
Yeah, FaZe was part of it, and now they were out. Now they're back in. Optic is joining. I feel if Optic's joining, people are starting to feel very comfortable with this movement. And
according to Reddit, the Optic fan base is confused by this move. Just because it doesn't seem very Optic of them to join in something that, kind of like how you said, for the longest time, WESA and PEA, don't get them twisted. They both were kind of shady at the start. No one really knew.
They all have their own agendas.
Right. Yeah. Everyone has their own thing, especially with WESA. The tree of ownership that branches from them is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, if you really look at the ownership in there, it's like, you could definitely see someone being shady with that, but they're getting more teams. Optic Gaming be another one of the NA teams alongside with Renegades and SK. I think it's always good if they're acknowledging both sides. I think it's good for WESA in that case to be
You're
doing that.
You're getting some big names to join, so it's going to give them more credibility and, you know, I mean, we'll just keep an eye on it and see where this goes.
And to no one's surprise, Cloud9 ended up being Immortals in the American minor qualifiers for the major. C9 ended up being Immortals pretty handily. I mean, it was 2-1. You know, they went to the third
well.
Map.
But yeah,
they
played good.
The maps that Cloud9 won.
The bigger deal is they beat them on LAN.
Right.
They've struggled so much
seven
against Immortals.
7-0, I believe.
Yeah, 7 or 8-0. One of the two is bad. They couldn't beat them on LAN. They found a way to get it done. They played well. Skadoodle looked like a star. I mean, they just played well.
So now, you know, this has put them, both of them, so Cloud9 won, they got 50K for it, but both of them ended up qualifying for the major qualifier.
Yeah, so still around to go.
Yes, right. They're not in yet, but they're one step closer. They're where they need to be. Obviously, Misfits being a part of that did not go through, obviously, with benching Shazam and Sean Garris getting married.
Look,
they
probably
had no chance going in. Now,
they probably weren't getting through anyway. Let's
so here's
real.
This. Here's this next level thought, and then we'll end the show. Do you think the reason they were able, the reason they felt comfortable benching Shazam for this weekend, for the qualifier, is because they knew without Sean Garris, they probably stood little to no chance. So they thought, if we have to make a statement, now is the time to do it. If we have to deliver a message that we're not going to accept you not taking this serious, would last week be the best time to do it, because they knew they probably weren't going to make it through anyways.
Look, dude, to quote Allen Iverson, practice. We're talking about practice here, okay? Like,
you're talking about practice with like a tier 3 CSGO team,
like,
who probably needs practice.
They probably do need practice, but Sean wasn't there anyway. Like, their in-game leader
wasn't
going to be there.
So maybe that's
like,
why
Shazam was their best player. If they wanted to have a chance to try and qualify, which, I mean, these guys,
but
Immortals, are playing with an off fifth as well. You know, it's
but
not
maybe
like,
that's why Misfits as an org looked at it and thought, we're not qualifying for this either way. Let's
would he, Sean
let's
Garris would have been back
now.
For the major qualifier, right?
If they made it
yeah,
through.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is you had a chance, because like, it's not like they play terrible against Cloud9, even without Sean Garris. Okay, Sean
right.
Garris is not a fragger. Sean Garris is kind of a dated tactical in-game leader at this point. He has a very static style. They're not a dynamic team on T side. They're very predictable with the way he calls. That's been one of his biggest problems. It was one of his assets early on, but as the game evolved, he did not. So I don't think him being there, they could have subbed somebody in and would have fragged at the minimum where he was going to bring his game. Yeah, they might have lacked a little bit in leadership, but they had a chance because Shazam was playing so well and completely gave it up. And you know what? They made a stand. Good for them. Shazam's an idiot for not going to the practice, in my opinion. I know I made the Allen Iverson joke, but still, this is your job. Do your job. Even if it was last minute, find a way to make it happen. They're paying you, right? So, hold on. I got one thing for you that we didn't mention that Brett would be super disappointed. Okay. Freiburg. Freiburg was released.
How did I forget to put that?
All you think about is Cloud Nine, dude. That's the selfish inside of you.
That's what it is. I'm just NA homer.
Freiburg released from NIP.
I only bring up important news.
You know, we only talk about Tier 1 CSGO for the most part. But yeah, Freiburg released. They picked up Rez from Epsilon. If you don't know, Rez and Draken were both stars on that team. So it's good to see them get a chance to play together again. And maybe this is the revamp NIP needed to make a move. So let's see what they do.
And we'll see if they ended up making a move with Epsilon. Does that put away any rumors of a Swedish shuffle?
We'll come back into this probably next episode.
We'll talk about it next week.
There's plenty to discuss
here. But for now, that is it. Episode 63 of The Center Ring is all said and done. Again, I appreciate you all for listening. If you made it this far, it was an extra episode. And you knew it was going to be when it was just me and Anuj, because we don't have Brett here rushing us out. But if you made it this far, I definitely appreciate it, or even if you just skipped through, I love you all the same.
Let us know on how we sounded.
Yeah, let us know. I know for a little bit the mic was sounding goofy, whatever. Like I said, it's at the home studio, so it takes some tweaks, you know? So let us know at The Center Ring on Twitter, or join our Discord. You'll find the link there as well. Our website, what is it?
TCR.gg. I know. Getting a revamp soon, so keep your eyes out. Hopefully we'll have that done for you guys. And again, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, where we're available everywhere. And
until then,
see you next time.